The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Dr. Scott Yunkin for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Health Issues. For the next half hour, I'll be reading articles from the Harvard Heart Letter and probably from the Mayo Clinic Health Letter as well. The first article is from the Harvard Heart Letter of July 2021 and is entitled, More Clues About the Healthiest Carb Choices. New evidence links diets that contain more simple, low-quality carbs to a higher risk of heart disease. But the big picture is more complex. Carbohydrate categories can be a bit confusing. Nutrition experts refer to carbs as simple or complex, low quality or high quality, and even just bad or good. Carbohydrate-rich foods can also be ranked by how quickly the sugar they contain is absorbed into your bloodstream after you eat it, using a scale known as the glycemic index, or GI. First developed 40 years ago, the glycemic index was in the news again recently. Last March, the New England Journal of Medicine published a large international study suggesting that diets with a higher glycemic index and load are associated with a higher risk of cardiovascular disease and death. The link was strongest among people who were overweight or obese. Glycemic index is one way to think about carbohydrate quality, but it's not the only way, says Dr. Frank Hugh, professor of nutrition and epidemiology at the Harvard T.H. Chan School of Public Health. You can also classify carbs as sugars, starches, and fibers. Here's a rundown of these three categories. Sugars. Easily digested sugary foods like sodas, candies, and desserts have a high glycemic index. Eating them causes blood sugar spikes and dips, which over time can make the body less sensitive to insulin, the hormone that regulates blood sugar. The resulting insulin resistance triggers weight gain, inflammation, and other factors that contribute to the artery clogging plaque that's responsible for most heart disease. Fiber. Foods full of fiber are digested much more slowly and tend to have a lower glycemic index. Low GI foods include whole or minimally processed carbohydrate-rich foods like whole grains, legumes, nuts, vegetables, and fruits. Here's the easy part. These carbohydrates are also classified as complex, high quality, or good carbs. Then there are starches. The most commonly consumed form of carbohydrate, starches include cereal grains like rice, wheat, and corn, and root vegetables like potatoes. Americans tend to eat mostly highly processed grains, like white rice and foods made with white flour. These refined starches are quickly broken down into sugar, which is why they have a high glycemic index. But some starchy foods, most notably legumes, contain what is known as resistant starch. Resistant starch is similar to fiber in that it cannot be directly absorbed by the body. It has to be broken down by specific gut bacteria. Eating foods high in resistant starch spurs the growth of these health-promoting bacteria. They produce short-chain fatty acids, which make your body more sensitive to insulin and reduce inflammation. In effect, resistant starch has the opposite effect from sugar and other highly processed carbs in your body. White potatoes are full of regular starch, which is why they have a high glycemic index. French fries and mashed potatoes are probably the most popular way to prepare spuds, but potato lovers might want to consider potato salad instead. If you leave potatoes in the refrigerator for 1 or 2 days, the cold temperature transforms some of the starch into resistant starch, says Dr. Hugh. Another culinary trick is to add vinegar or lemon juice, as the acid slows the conversion of starch to sugar in the body. The article goes on to describe examples of foods that have a low, medium, or high glycemic load or glycemic index. Foods with a high glycemic index include white potatoes, refined breakfast cereals, sugar-sweetened beverages, candy bars, white rice, and white flour pasta. A low glycemic load is seen in bran cereals, apples, oranges, kidney beans, black beans, lentils, cashews, peanuts, and carrots. The next article in the Harvard Heart Letter of July 2021 is entitled COVID-19 and Cardiovascular Concerns, an Evolving Story. Doctors are still unraveling the connections between heart-related risk and infection with the novel coronavirus. They point out that if you want updated information about the pandemic, you can turn to www.health.harvard.edu/CV, as in victory, RC. It's clear that people with heart disease are more vulnerable to complications from SARS-CoV-2, the virus responsible for the COVID-19 pandemic. But our understanding about how the novel coronavirus affects the cardiovascular system is still evolving, says cardiologist Dr. C. Michael Gibson, professor of medicine at Harvard Medical School. So far, much of the information has come from observational studies, which can point to trends and associations, he says. More definitive answers require long-term, randomized clinical trials that control for different factors, including varied medical histories and medication use, to study how COVID-19 and possible therapies affect people who have or are at risk for heart disease. There's nothing novel about infections harming the heart. In fact, some germs attack oddly specific parts of the heart. Any serious infection or illness stresses your heart, in part by increasing its need for oxygen. Respiratory viruses that cause coughing and congestion make this problem worse. In addition, your immune system unleashes inflammatory molecules to fight the infection. These cells may boost the likelihood of blood clots, which may explain why heart attacks appear to be about 6 times more likely to occur within a week after a bout of influenza compared with other time periods. Are blood clots more common in people with COVID-19 compared with other severe infections? We just don't know, since there are no good comparison studies, says Dr. Gibson. Just being bedridden makes you more likely to develop clots in the veins, a problem known as venous thromboembolism. But in people who weren't hospitalized, venous thromboembolism rates were similar among people with COVID-19 symptoms who tested positive and those who tested negative for the virus. Heart damage. The SARS-CoV-2 virus invades cells by binding to a protein called ACE2, found throughout the body, including in cells in the heart, lungs, and blood vessels. Early reports spiked concerns about possible heart muscle damage from COVID-19 infection in young, healthy athletes. But the latest data suggests this risk is less than 5%. Subsequent studies confirmed high levels of inflammatory cells, but not necessarily in the heart muscle itself, says Dr. Gibson. Two drug classes often used to treat high blood pressure, ACE inhibitors and angiotensin receptor blockers, or ARBs, interact with the ACE2 protein to lower blood pressure. Initially, concern was raised about whether these medications might help or harm people infected with SARS-CoV-2. But a review that pooled findings from 52 studies involving more than 1 million people offered some reassurance. Overall, ACE inhibitors and ARBs seem to be safe in people infected with COVID-19. There's an associated article. It's called When Microbes Invade the Heart. Virus, bacteria, and even fungi can lead to infections that reach the heart, triggering an uncommon disorder called myocarditis, which means inflammation of the heart muscle. Viruses like Coxsackie, herpes virus, and others are the most common culprits. But two relatively common bacterial infections, strep throat and Lyme disease, occasionally wreak havoc inside the heart. Group A streptococcus bacteria causes strep throat and scarlet fever, which, if not properly treated, can develop into rheumatic fever. An overzealous immune response creates inflammation throughout the body, leading to symptoms like a fever and tender, painful joints. But the disease can also damage the heart's mitral valve, which controls blood flow between the heart's left upper and lower chambers. While now rare in the United States, rheumatic fever is still common in developing countries. Lyme disease, which is transmitted by blood-sucking ticks, can also have rare but potentially serious heart consequences. Ticks carrying the culprit bacteria Borrelia burgdorferi are most commonly found in the Northeast, Mid-Atlantic, and parts of the Midwest. Classic symptoms of Lyme disease are a red bullseye rash, fever, headache, and fatigue. But if the infection enters the heart tissues, it can disrupt the electrical signals that can coordinate the heartbeat. Known as Lyme carditis, this complication occurs about 1 in 100 Lyme disease cases reported to the CDC. Next in the Harvard Heart Letter is an article entitled, Three Ways to Enhance Your Walking Workouts. The beauty of walking for exercise is that it requires no special skills or equipment other than a comfy, supportive pair of shoes. The downside is it can get a little tedious. To break through your boredom, try reinvigorating your walking regimen with some new twists. All steps count, but some count a little more than others, says Dr. Edward Phillips, assistant professor of physical medicine and rehabilitation at Harvard Medical School. For example, if you add short bursts of fast walking to your strolls, that elevates your heart rate and improves your cardiorespiratory fitness more than if you simply stayed at a slower pace. Pick up a pair of Nordic poles to use during your walk and you'll engage many more muscles and burn more calories. Or you can use walking as an opportunity to practice mindfulness, a mind-calming practice that can help you reduce stress. First discussion is about interval walking. Dr. Phillips recommends this routine only for more experienced walkers. For interval walking, you alternate brief bursts of fast walking with more moderately paced strides. After a 5-minute warm-up, walk briskly for 15, 30, or 60 seconds. Then slow down and recover at a normal pace for an equal amount of time. Or you may want to double your recovery time. Start with shorter intervals of rapid walking and gradually lengthen them as you increase your stamina over the following weeks or months. Or you can keep the intervals constant and extend your overall workout time. A smartwatch programmed to beep at set times comes in handy, but a $10 watch with a second hand also works, says Dr. Phillips. Alternatively, you can use landmarks instead of time to mark your intervals. For example, walk briskly for one or two city blocks between two telephone poles, or a quarter of a lap around a local park. Nordic walking uses special poles with hand straps that help you engage your upper body. The motion is similar to cross-country skiing, with the poles slanted back behind you as you walk. These workouts may boost your cardiovascular workload and calorie burn up to 25% more than regular walking. If you'd like to try out the poles, ask around your neighborhood, because chances are someone has a dusty pair in the garage, says Dr. Phillips. But if you purchase them at an outdoor store, an employee can help you adjust the height and give you a quick primer on how to use them. Most have metal tips and attachable rubber tips for use on asphalt or concrete. If your idea of sitting to meditate doesn't grab you, perhaps walking meditation, also called mindful walking, is more your speed. The goal is to focus on the present moment without worrying about the past or the future. Calming your mind in this way may help ease stress, and excess stress can contribute to high blood pressure and other cardiovascular conditions. Walk in a familiar place, but pay close attention to all the sights, sounds, and smells around you. If you prefer, you can focus on your breathing. As you walk, match your breath to your steps, inhaling for 4 steps, then exhaling for 4 steps. Do this for a few minutes, then try extending the number of steps per breath, in and out for 6 paces each breath for several minutes, and then to 8. See which breath pattern feels most comfortable, and stick with that for a while. Near the end of your walk, switch back to a leisurely stroll and just breathe normally. If you have the opportunity, try walking close to water, the ocean, a river, lake, or pond, as these locations tend to encourage relaxation. Another option, labyrinth walking, can be especially helpful for evoking a meditative state, a pattern of paths that weave in a circle around a central point. A labyrinth encourages slow, mindful steps. You can find labyrinths in many places, including public parks, houses of worship, and healthcare facilities like hospitals and hospices. Now we're going to turn to an article called Research We're Watching, And again, this is the Harvard Heart Letter of July 2021. A big belly boosts heart risk, even if you're not overweight. Even if your weight is normal, a widening waistline may put you at higher risk of heart disease, according to the American Heart Association. Fat inside the center of your body, known as abdominal or visceral fat, which encases your organs, is more worrisome than fat found just beneath the skin, known as subcutaneous fat. In addition, fat can also accumulate in the liver, known as non-alcoholic fatty liver disease, which adds to cardiovascular disease risk. According to the statement published April 22, 2021 in Circulation, you should check your waist circumference regularly. To do so, wrap a tape measure just above the upper level of your hip bone. Ideally, your waist size should be less than one half of your height, even if your body mass index is in the normal range. Regular physical activity and cutting down on simple sugars are the best way to shed extra belly fat. The next brief article and research we're watching, a new way to take aspirin, liquid-filled capsules. Millions of Americans who take a daily low-dose aspirin to lower their heart attack risk may soon have a new way to take this popular drug. In early March, the FDA approved the first liquid-filled aspirin capsule called Vazalore, V-A-Z-A-L-O-R-E. This novel formulation releases aspirin in the duodenum, the first part of the intestine. This may help reduce stomach erosions and ulcers that sometimes occur with regular aspirin, also known as plain or intermediate-release aspirin. Most of the aspirin sold in the United States is enteric-coated, which is also formulated to protect the stomach. However, the coating reduces aspirin absorption in some people. When compared with regular and enteric-coated aspirin, Vazalore, that's the liquid-filled aspirin, clot-preventing effects were equal to regular aspirin and faster than enteric-coated formulations. The capsules are expected to be on the market later this year and are available in doses of 81 or 325 milligrams. Leisure time exercise is better than work-related physical activity. Although exercise guidelines encourage all types of physical activity, a new study suggests that while leisure time activity promotes cardiovascular health, job-related activity does not. The study included 104,000 men and women aged 20 to 100 living in Copenhagen who rated their leisure and work-related physical activity as low, moderate, high, or very high. After an average follow-up of 10 years, researchers found that the more leisure time activity people reported, the lower their risk of experiencing a heart attack or stroke. In contrast, the people who got most of their physical activity on the job were more likely to experience cardiovascular problems. These findings held after researchers adjusted for factors like lifestyle habits, health conditions like high blood pressure and high cholesterol, and socioeconomic status that could sway the results. One possible explanation, compared with leisure exercise, work activity doesn't raise a person's heart rate enough to improve fitness. That study was published in the April 9th issue of the European Heart Journal. There's an article that's entitled Autoimmune Conditions and Heart Disease, And it includes a small additional article called Mysterious Immune System Misfires. Your immune system normally protects your body against viruses, bacteria, and other invaders. But sometimes immune cells launch an inappropriate attack against the body's own tissues. The resulting conditions, known as autoimmune systemic inflammatory disease, include psoriasis. The inflammation in psoriasis affects the skin, causing a pink or dull red scaly skin rash that occurs in patches, usually on the back of the elbow, in skin folds, and on the scalp. About 1 in 3 people with psoriasis also has a type of inflammatory arthritis, known as psoriatic arthritis, which causes joint inflammation and morning stiffness, in addition to the characteristic rash. Rheumatoid arthritis is a condition where the immune system attacks targets, tissue lining the joints, creating inflammation marked by swelling, pain, and stiffness. It typically strikes multiple joints at once, especially in the hands and feet. Other symptoms include morning stiffness that lasts more than an hour and fatigue. And finally, systemic lupus erythematosus. The inflammatory process in lupus can affect almost any organ in the body, triggering a wide array of symptoms. Common early symptoms include fever and joint pain, similar to rheumatoid arthritis. One distinct symptom is a rash across the bridge of the nose, called a butterfly rash. The immune system attack can also damage the heart, the lungs, the kidneys, and the blood vessels. Well, it looks like we've run out of time for today's episode of Health Issues. Be sure to listen next time. I sure hope you enjoyed it. I'm Dr. Scott Youngkin, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Health Issues is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service. I sure hope you enjoyed it. Thank you.